Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, once again, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How are you doing after our three-hour break?
It's time! That's my best Michael Buffer right there.
What?
Or is that Bruce Buffer?
What the hell are you talking about?
The guy who introduces a UFC fight.
Bruce.
There you go.
Does he say, I thought you were going to go, it's Vader time.
No. R.I.P.
That would be much better.
R.I.P.
Banger in the paint, Rajan Walia. Did you get a good 2.5 hour break here? 3 hours?
Yeah, I don't know if that's enough, you know. The West is just a whole other animal compared to the East.
So what, you needed more time to do research?
Yeah, just look at the matchups and see kind of how teams face up, and there's more injuries, and I don't know, it's a whole other animal.
All right, well, you've already alluded to it. This will be our Western Conference preview. Why don't you start us off in Houston and Utah? I'm going to assume the biggest storyline out of this is obviously the two guards, Donovan Mitchell and James Harden, going at each other, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the main storyline. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell's in his second year, and he started off the year slow, but he definitely picked it up towards the end of the season, and also Utah just had a much easier schedule. All that being said, I just don't think Utah has enough firepower to contend with Houston. Houston plays at such an incredible pace, and Houston's actually assembled a good roster in terms of depth, considering halfway through the season, they had pretty much a bunch of role players playing starter minutes, and now those players are going to have a bit more experience in the playoffs. But I personally think that Utah is going to challenge Houston in one or two games, but I think Houston might win this series a lot sooner than we'd like for a 4 or 5 matchup.
Yeah, this is going to be a really entertaining series, maybe the most entertaining and close series in terms of competition. So with these two teams last year, I think the biggest difference in the series was how well Chris Paul played and how he took advantage of the mid-range area with Rudy Gobert just staying back on the pick and rolls. And this series might be a little bit different depending on if Rubio plays. But it's going to be interesting to see if James Harden is able to get his game off against Utah when they're going to really crowd him and force him into Gobert again and see if he can make those little flip shots. But he's been a lot better making those floaters this year than he was last.
Did Rubio play last year? No, right?
No, he didn't.
No.
He's questionable for game one.
Yeah, he's going to be huge for this. Because without him, they sort of just only have Donovan again as the only ball handler, right? It'll be a lot of pick and roll. Literally the exact same thing as they did last year, pretty much.
Yeah, and I think Utah's, again, like, it kind of goes back to the Eastern Conference with Indiana and Boston. Like, Utah just doesn't have as much firepower as Houston. Like, they're going to have to keep the score in the low hundreds or high 90s to even have a chance, because I just don't see them being able to put up 120, 125 points like the Rockets want to. And we all know that the Rockets are kind of a volume shooting team. They shoot the most threes in the NBA. And, like, I actually think this series won't be close for all those reasons. Like, I think maybe one or two games maybe, like, coming down to, like, two or three possessions. But I think overall the series might be a quicker one than we all expect.
Damn, you're really down on Utah, eh? Their defense is so good, though.
Yeah, but you still need to score the basket.
Yeah, well, obviously, but if you can limit Houston to, like, scoring, basically you can let Harden do whatever he wants. I think the strategy is to let Harden just go off and then literally stop everyone else, right? And then try to push Harden into the paint as much as possible and have him go against Gobert.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're still going to hope that Mitchell scores, what, 30 points a game? And who else is going to put up at least 20 points for you on a consistent nightly basis?
It'll be like...
That's...
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's definitely going to be more of a group effort, right?
Yeah, like even if Mitchell puts up similar numbers to Harden, if like Utah does do a good job of crowding Harden, like I just don't see how the numbers add up. Like I don't see how Utah's going to have a consistent 20-point score behind Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, they might not need it, though. If you have a bunch of guys putting in 15 to 18 points on efficient shooting.
Like, that's asking a lot. I don't know.
Not really. Derek Favors is going to eat anyone on Houston inside. Literally anyone on that team other than Capella. But Capella's going to be handling Gobert the whole time anyways. Mm-hmm. Right. So once that the bench unit comes in and Favors goes to town and he goes to like playing the five like he usually does against bench units, he's going to dominate. That's an easy like 15 points for him. Not even trying. Right, and then you have Korver or a Crowder hitting a few threes a game. It's not, I don't know. I don't think it's as one-sided as you're making it seem.
I think that's where the series might turn, though, whether they play Favors a lot of minutes at the power forward position or if they're going to choose to play Crowder later on in the series, but they find that Gobert and Favors just too much of an advantage for Houston because Houston's going to space them out and keep Tucker in the corner, obviously, and Favors' position at power forward is not a huge advantage for Utah in this matchup especially. He's better as a backup center, as you said, so they might end up just starting Crowder by, you know, game two or three if it doesn't work out in the first game or two or so.
Yeah, I think it would be smart for them to actually play Crowder because Houston does shoot so many threes. Crowder gives you a bit more flexibility in terms of your lineup. But I think the possible gain of Favors is mitigated just by Houston's depth. Like, they have Nene and Fareed, and obviously they're not going to put up monster numbers.
Nene is not an issue here, and Kenneth Fareed can barely stay on the floor now. Let's relax.
But at the end of the day, you might only need 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes from these players just to mitigate any possible gain that Favors could have. To be honest, Fareed in the middle of the season looked like he was like a renewed player when he came to Houston. Obviously, in the playoffs, whole different story. We're not expecting offensive input, but I think it's just more of a matchup thing.
No. Fareed was good when Capella was out, right? Like, that's why exactly. They brought him in.
Yeah, exactly.
But now, like, there's no need for him anymore. He's redundant.
Oh, yeah, but if as a bench player against, let's say, Favors, if he comes off the bench.
He can't handle Favors. He's a terrible defender. Kenneth Fareed is actually a really bad defender. He's got a high motor, but he's not good.
You would know. You would know. Know the...
He's a liability. He's the more of a liability on defense. Like, dead ass. He is not a good defender. But he's not... I don't think he's even worth mentioning in this conversation. Because he's not going to play. It's basically going to be Capella. And then... I literally can't think of who else they would have behind them. It'd have to be Fareed, but 10 minutes at most. There's no way they let him play that much. He can barely step on the floor during the regular season.
Fair enough. But I still think that, like, at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to, can Utah score enough? Like, we all know that they're a good defensive team. It's just they need to have a bit more offensive firepower, and going back to a few seasons when they had ISO Joe, that's kind of the player they would need off the bench just to provide them a bit of spark and just to obviously get more scoring. So, like, the way I see it, I just think Houston's going to kind of pummel Utah in terms of just overall, like, in the series score, they're going to be blowing them out a few games, and there'll be one or two close games probably in Utah. But I don't see the series going past five games.
Holy shit. Wow.
I disagree. I think that both teams, like these two teams specifically, Utah and Houston, they've been the hottest teams in the NBA since February 1st. And I think the key for Utah to win this series, or at least win two or three games, is to keep their fouls down. They're the eighth best team in terms of not fouling in the NBA. So keeping Gobert in the game is going to be huge for them, and having him play, you know, 38 minutes instead of 32 to 35 is going to be massive for them, because the minutes that he comes out of the game, they bleed points, obviously, even though Favors has had a matchup advantage in terms of being in the paint on pick and rolls against Houston. He still gets torched when he has to guard a guy like Harden on the perimeter. So Coach, Coach Snyder is going to have to really get creative in terms of, as you mentioned, creating points that aren't just Mitchell going against, you know, one of their big guys one-on-one. I think you're going to see a lot of PJ Tucker at center too, to space Utah out in certain positions as well. But I think besides not fouling, yeah, I think that Mitchell has to be more of a creator. He has to average at least like 6 assists a game, I think, and getting into the paint when he goes against guys like Capella and Tucker, and getting guys in the perimeter like Joe Ingles open. And Joe Ingles hasn't played well against Houston at all the last couple of years.
I can't wait to see PJ Tucker center against Derek Favors. It's going to be a pleasure to watch.
Two strong bulls.
Yeah, which one is stronger? I'm going to take the bigger guy.
You know, the Ringer came out with a video yesterday with PJ Tucker, and I think it was Danny Chow from the Ringer, and apparently PJ Tucker eats pancakes before every single game day. It's insane. He says that, like, he's afraid that if he does and he has a bad game, that's going to and be like a whole stigma where he has to go back to his usual routine. So he literally has like a pound of pancakes every single day before he actually plays, 5 hours before the game.
That's gross.
IHOP.
He's at IHOP.
Yeah.
Oh, we always hear about these players like having these very strict diets, and then this video comes out of, you know, PJ Tucker having pancakes literally every single day of his life. It's crazy.
But he's not like one of the thinner guys, right? Like, he's a stocky dude.
No, but he's strong.
Yeah, he is.
He's muscular too, right? So he burns that off real quick, I guess, because he plays so damn hard.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, if LeBron came out and said he ate pancakes every day, whoa.
Then you'd have a lot of kids, or I guess more kids now, that are going to be fat as fuck.
All right, Josh. Well, I guess, Raj, you've already said 5 games for this series.
Yeah, Houston in 5.
My God. Josh, what do you think?
I mean, last... went 6, didn't it? Pretty sure it won 6 games last year, and that's without the possibility of Rubio, and I think Utah's better this year too, so I think it's going to go at least 6 or 7. I'm going to pick the Rockets in 7.
Man, y'all have no faith.
Peter's just wishful thinking, eh?
I'm going Utah.
It's a tough matchup for the Rockets, so I think it's going to be a really close series, but ultimately I think home court advantage is going to be the difference.
I don't think so. Because I don't see Houston's guys being able to shoot. Their shooting has gotten much worse than last year. Right?
Lately. Lately, pretty good the last couple months.
Yeah.
So who...
Did they set the record for most threes in a game?
I'm so sorry. I'm so scared of Daniel House in the playoffs. Let's chill. You know what I mean? Like, come on. You're looking at guys who barely play, who are going to barely play, who have barely played all year until, like, the last 2 months. You think Austin Rivers and Daniel House are a real concern for Utah?
No. Austin Rivers is going to play some significant minutes in this series. It's inevitable because they're going to want to also maintain Chris Paul's minutes just because he's had a pretty recognizable injury record in the playoffs.
To say the least.
To say the least, yeah. But I do think that Houston is a deeper team than they were in the beginning of the season. And I don't think Utah really has an advantage in terms of bench play versus the Rockets. I'm not saying that. I'd say they're more or less equal. They're both teams that aren't too deep, and they rely mostly on their starting five for most of the scoring. But I do think the Rockets I think they match up pretty well against Utah. And at the end of the day, it's going to come down to who controls the pace and who makes their shots, and I think Houston has enough offensive firepower to beat Utah's defense.
Yeah, Utah just has to play a smarter game, as I mentioned before, the fouls, but the turnovers too, because Houston plays a really aggressive defensive scheme where they're switching and really hugging up on ball handlers as well. So, as I mentioned before, Mitchell has to be huge in this series, but Utah's the 4th worst team in terms of turnovers per game, so they really have to clean that up, and Coach Snyder has to come up with a scheme to get these guys open shots, as I mentioned before.
All right, let's keep it moving. Why don't we move to...
Wait, hold on a second. Who did you pick?
I said Utah in seven.
Oh, wow, okay. On the road.
Yeah.
I like it.
I don't think the road or being at home really matters that much. Not in Houston, at least.
Okay, come on. I'm pretty sure that, like, 75% of home teams win game seven.
Houston's
right?
Home advantage? Come on.
I know their fans aren't great, but the stats don't lie.
Yeah, but what about the other 25%, Josh? What about the 25%?
You know, even though I hate watching Houston, I do wish that you are wrong, because I think we all deserve another Houston-Golden State series, and hopefully this time it's more aesthetically pleasing to watch, even though it was a really competitive series. It's just really tough to watch ISO ball the entire game.
You'd rather have that than Utah-Golden State? Who can actually beat them?
Yeah. If Mike Conley was on Utah right now, I would say that it would be a much better matchup in terms of, you know, being able to watch the game and not want to claw your eyes out. And also the fact that Utah might actually be able to beat them because Conley is a Golden State killer, but he's not on the team, and they didn't really improve at the trade deadline, even though they're still a really good team. I just don't think that it would be as competitive. I think Golden State would beat them in five, and, well, Houston, I think it would go seven.
Man, yep, bugging. Houston. I'm not a Houston believer at all, clearly.
I hope not.
Oh, my God. All right, can we move on now? Do I have permission here? Thank you. OKC as the sixth seed versus Portland at the three. Three? Three.
Yeah, Portland three seed.
Can you believe it? 2 years in a row, Portland at the three seed.
Hey, that was a crazy end to the season. Like, I know that could have its own little podcast on how the whole Western Conference standings came into place over the last 2 days.
Thank you, Denver.
Yeah. And thank you, Sacramento, for choking against Portland.
Seriously.
Yeah. But going to the series, I think the overall, like, kind of message from the series is, like, this series could have been one hell of a series if Portland was healthy.
If Nurkic was around?
And if we had a healthy McCollum.
Yeah, how hurt is he, really? Like, I haven't been following Portland closely enough. Is he?
I think he played 30 minutes in the last game that he played, so I don't know if he's the same in the same shape in terms of being able to move the same way.
Yeah.
But he did play a decent amount last game, so.
Yeah, I saw him make that pass to Mo Harkless for the corner three. But that was basically all I saw of that game.
It's sort of funny how they're in the same seed and in the same position against a defense that's really going to hug up on their ball handlers, because OKC brings their bigs like way up. They don't drop back, and they don't just lie to take those shots off the pick and roll. So they're going to face a situation just like last year against, you know, Davis and Mirotic, where they're going to double, you know, McCollum or Lillard, whoever has the ball, Seth Curry, and they're going to force the ball out of their hands. And the other guys like Aminu and Harkless and Jake Layman off the bench are going to have to make shots from the perimeter. And they haven't really upgraded those spots. I mean, they obviously have Rodney Hood now, and he's, who knows with Rodney Hood, right?
He's been playing better. He's
playing better, but is he a reliable three-point shooter?
Nah.
He used to be like 3 years ago, not anymore.
Nah. I think Seth is much more reliable than Rodney Hood is.
I think Steph is as well.
Yeah, Seth is much better. Seth is slightly better.
Yeah, but I think for Portland, like, it's going to come down to, you know, Coach Terry Stotts finding a way to get their guards free, unlike last year, because within that four-game sweep, you never really had a stretch of time in those games where, you know, Damian Lillard or McCollum really got into their flow and got into their offense and were able to take the shots they want to take. So unless those guys are shooting, like, you know, 15 to 23 a game, which they're probably not going to when you have Steven Adams coming up and blitzing you. Mm-hmm. Other guys are going to have to make shots, and I'm not really sure I can rely on Aminu and, you know, Harkless to make shots. And plus, Portland, and regular season doesn't matter that much, but Portland was 0-4 against OKC this year, whereas they were 4-0 last year, which is sort of weird.
Can Cantor pass the ball?
He's okay making reads, but he's more so a guy that's just going to get the ball in the paint and just throw up those little flip shots.
Yeah. Do you remember a few years ago, I think it was in 15 when Golden State first won, how Steve Kerr brought back David Lee, and he would always just get the ball at the top of the paint after the double team came, and he was a guy who would pass the ball to the cutters? Can you turn Cantor into that kind of player? Or is he not skilled enough?
I don't think he's skilled enough that far away from the rim.
Yeah, I didn't think so either, but that would be the move, right? If you're being doubled up as, or if they're doubling Dame or CJ, you want one of the bigs to come up to relieve some of the pressure. And ideally, that guy could be your like secondary playmaker in that sense, right?
Yeah, I think the issue is still like whoever catches it in that position, whether it's Cantor, Aminu, or Harkless, like I think they're going to play off of them and give them the open look. And again, I just think that you can't really rely on those three players from the perimeter or from farther out.
I mean, like I said, Portland has had so much experience against this type of defense that they should be prepared going in the series now. And on that point, you know, Cantor's one of the worst pick-and-roll defenders in the NBA. And if he can't make those reads, you might see Zach Collins get a really big opportunity. And the series might actually hinge on him making the right decisions on the pick-and-roll. He's a good player, too, but he hasn't really had the experience.
He's like isn't he a sophomore this year?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of pressure. I can't wait till we see the can't play Cantor move again. Like Billy Donovan did to him a few years ago.
Yeah, he got caught on camera saying that in a huddle.
There's no way Cantor actually plays that much. Like, he's great for like a pick and roll on offense, but on defense, a guy can't do a thing.
He's still going to play. Like at the end of the day, like the depth that Portland has in the center position is what Zach Collins and this Cantor. Like, I don't really think they're going to rely too much on Miles Leonard. And with Steven Adams on the glass and the length that OKC has, like, you're going to have someone in there for rebounds or you're just going to get killed on the glass.
I would take my risk.
Yeah, and I believe that Paul George is averaging around 30 points per game against Portland this year as well. And it's just confirmed that he's playing in game one. He was questionable this afternoon and up until now. So it's now confirmed he is playing, but we'll see how healthy he is going into game one.
So it's a bum shoulder, right?
He does. It's his right shoulder, too. So shooting shoulder.
I mean, it didn't affect him on that shot against Houston. Really affected him the rest of the game, but not that shot.
Yes. I think one of the better first-round matchups in terms of, you know, individual player matchups, though, is Russ against Dame, and those guys have had, like, a long-seated, you know, rivalry. It's a healthy rivalry, too. It's not like they really, like, hate each other or anything, but they really go at one each other and when they play each other, and, you know, it should be a really fun series with those two going at it.
Yeah, I wish we got to see Portland at full strength. I thought it would have been a hell of a matchup, like I said at the beginning. With Nurkic and McCollum healthy, because I could just see a situation where Portland's strong season again kind of comes down to them just getting outmatched in terms of their role players not being able to fulfill their roles. And I really fear the worst for Portland in terms of losing this series in hopefully not a sweep, but I can see it going 5 or 6, but I don't really see them winning more than 2 games.
Damn. Josh, what do you think?
I sort of agree. I mean, Nurkic, if he was actually playing, like, he was the third guy for Portland this year. I think he made a pretty big jump, especially on offense. Like, he was already a really good defender. He's one of those guys that can actually keep Steven Adams off the offensive boards and be able to make plays in the pick and roll and score, too. But without him, I think it'll be a close series because Portland can really score a lot of points. And OKC, even though they've struggled for the most part of the second part of the year, I still think they have the advantage in having, you know, 2 or maybe even 3 of the best players in the series, with McCollum not really being right. So ultimately, I'll pick OKC in 6 games.
OKC in 5.
OKC in 5, yeah, that's where I'm going to go. It's a damn shame. Like, hopefully Dame gets in a better situation next year. That's all I can say.
Yeah, hopefully they get him somebody that's not Evan Turner.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been good, but goddamn.
Yeah, I feel like, I think I've said this in previous podcasts, Portland kind of reminds me of the Raptors of the East. Oh, sorry,
the Raptors of the West. Last year.
Or the Raptors of the West, period.
Last year.
Last year.
They don't have Kawhi now. All right, let's keep it pushing then. The 2 seed, Denver Nuggets. My Denver Nuggets. Against the 7th seed, Josh's very own San Antonio Spurs starring DeMar DeRozan.
Puke.
Yo, San Antonio can't shoot with this team, right? Like, I cannot imagine how San Antonio has any chance in this series. But I'm obviously a major homer, so I just need someone to convince me otherwise before I make my actual picks.
Well, the biggest advantage San Antonio has is coaching. And looking at the stats, Denver gives up the most corner threes out of anybody in the NBA. And I think San Antonio is going to be able to take advantage of that. I think that they're going to get, better shooters to be able to get in the paint and take advantage of Denver playing a really... They sort of play like OKC, where they have Jokic really come up and pressure the ball. They don't have him drop back anymore. And that gets his energy up, and he's more active on defense. But ultimately, that leads to three-point shots because teams swing the ball around. And San Antonio is one of the smarter teams in the NBA in creating good three-point shots. So I think that ultimately, San Antonio has been going back and forth with playing Poeltl at center. I think they're going to have to play LaMarcus Aldridge at center and play Rudy Gay power forward. And Jokic is going to have to guard somebody instead of having to, play off and stay in space with Poeltl. So I think that San Antonio's best chance of winning the series is having Aldridge at center and just trying to keep up with Denver and shoot a lot of threes, which is something they're not really known for because they shoot a high percentage in terms of shooting the three-point shot, but they don't really take that many. So I think that's their best chance. It's going to be interesting to see if Pop agrees with that notion or if he just starts Poeltl and Jokic just goes to town because Jokic has owned San Antonio the entire year.
Yeah, and Poeltl's not that good of a defender, right? Like, he's high energy, but same thing. Positionally, he's not the best.
He gets pushed around.
Yeah, he's a little weak. I'm more interested in seeing how Denver's guards do against San Antonio's defense. You know what I mean? San Antonio's a really good team at defending the three. So if Jamal Murray or Gary Harris aren't able to step up, then it might be a tough love for Denver right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those series, too, that you look at experience versus youth, too, because most of the guys on Denver haven't been in the playoffs besides Paul Millsap, really. And
Mason Plumlee, thank you.
Yeah, I mean...
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas.
He's not going to even play.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, if they lose game one, then, San Antonio has a massive advantage, and I think in terms of the psyche of the series, which guy in Denver is going to be able to step up into that role and be the guy? I mean, Jokic should be that guy, but if he is passive again like he is every third game, it seemed like, for the second half of the year.
Relax. It was like once a week. It was like once a week.
Which is every third game.
Yeah.
Damn. Seemed that way, though. The last part of the year, the last two or three months, he's just been really passive, so he has to be the man in the series. And I think Jamal Murray is going to be the second guy in this team, obviously. I think that he's going to really have to step up in that role and average more than 20 points a game in the series.
I think he does. There's something about him that, he has that attitude, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You saw it in the last game of the year against Minnesota. He just took over.
Yeah, two last games in a row, I guess. Whatever.
Against Minnesota.
He's got big cojones, if you will. He wants that shot, it seems like, every time.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't want it to his detriment like Russell Westbrook.
Subtle shots.
It's true, though. I think this is an interesting series in terms of just kind of styles. I think that it's whoever dictates the pace is going to win the game. And I think that's obviously true for many of the series. But I think this one in particular... I feel like if San Antonio can really kind of limit the transition offense that Denver has and really kind of make it more of a half-court game, I think they'll have a good shot in terms of being able to win two or three games in the series and push it to seven. But I just think Denver's just too deep, and I think Denver's very good at home. I think San Antonio's very good at home. So I could see this series going to seven games, probably the only series I think in the first round that will. But I think Denver's just going to have a bit more class, and that home court advantage is going to push them through. So I think Denver's probably going to win the series in seven games.
You know, it's funny. You talked about pace, and if they slow it down, San Antonio should have an advantage. But Denver plays two bigs a lot, right? It's always Jokic and Plumlee. Or Jokic and Millsap and Plumlee. It's rare that only one of those guys is on the floor at the alone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But in terms, what about transition points, though?
What about transition points? These guys all run much more than San Antonio guys do.
Exactly. So I feel like they're just their youth and especially their guard play. Like, they want to play a little faster, like, especially with, like, on a no-score basket. Like, Jamal Murray's going to want to push the ball up the court and really try to get open looks for, like, Gary Harris, like, Millsap. Whereas in San Antonio's really going to want to slow the game down, limit the possessions, work the half court, work the inside game, work their kind of advantage inside a little, I think, with LaMarcus and Rudy Gay in the mid-range game.
Yeah, I hate to be that guy, but Denver's actually a slower-paced team than San Antonio.
Are they?
Yeah, their pace is 26.
They're the third slowest in terms of pace in the NBA, whereas San Antonio is eighth.
Eighth worst or eighth?
Overall? Eighth worst. So Denver's the third slowest team. San Antonio's the eighth slowest team. So Denver's really slowed it down this year. Their half-court offense has actually been pretty good.
That's why they close out games in the fourth, man. That's why they're like
that's
one of the
why
best
Jokic
clutch
has
teams.
To step up.
Oh, he will. Also, Paul Millsap is being much more important for this team recently. Have you noticed he's been taking over games?
Yeah, they've been going to him more, especially in ISO situations, yeah. But I think if they put Rudy Gay on him, that's not really a matchup advantage. So they're going to have to look at Jokic versus Aldridge a lot more. And then obviously whoever Bryn Forbes is guarding, whoever DeRozan is guarding, just get those guys in actions and abuse them.
Will Barton, calling your name. So what do you, Josh, well, I already heard what Raj said, a long series, which I don't believe. Josh, what do you got?
I think if you look at this series in a sense of like NBA history, you would say that it's going to go seven games just because you have the experienced team with the all-time great coach.
Hold on.
You know,
sorry,
a team
you
that
continue.
Can take advantage. What's that?
How experienced are they in San Antonio? Other than like the coaching staff, obviously, but you have LaMarcus, Patty Mills, Marco.
DeMar,
right? So those like four main guys. Because and Rudy Gay, sorry. That's five. Never mind. I was going to say, yeah, you can't really rely on like Bryn Forbes or Derek White as experience, right? Or Jakob Poeltl.
Well, the other thing, too, is the Spurs never beat themselves, right? So Denver is going to actually have to get out of their lackadaisical effort and lackadaisical play they've, you know, put forward the last month of the season and actually get out there and take it, you know?
Hey, put it their sounds footprint like down in the game.
What's
it was
that?
All strategic just so they wouldn't have to face Houston in the second round. Can we just point out that the basketball gods are smiling very, very kindly on Denver right now?
Or they're really angry at Denver for what they did, and they're going to strike them down in the first round.
They should have punished them in the season, man. That's the thing.
No, they're just going to wait for disappointment in the playoffs. No,
nah,
I'm kidding.
They literally let Denver tank away games. Like, literally handed games over to Portland in the last, like, 2 minutes of the game without playing any starters just so that Portland could overseed Houston and take the third spot. I mean, I'm impressed that it actually worked out. I did not think that this would fly, but by God, the basketball gods are smiling.
That was an all-time lucky last day of the regular season for Denver.
Right?
Yeah, but you know what?
And
they have
actually
to capitalize,
last two games,
though.
Sorry.
Last it was, like,
two
the
days.
Last, like, week. They were strategically tanking already. Like, as soon as they found out they couldn't get the
first
seed.
Just to, you know, give the Cole's Notes version of it, it took two game winners on the second last day of the year, and then it took a 28-point comeback in Portland, and I think
well,
it was a 13-point comeback in the last 3 minutes of the Denver game.
Correct.
Where they had a 97% chance of losing that game, yeah. Just to get the two seed and just to ensure that Houston was in the four seed. So,
this is correct.
There's that.
And it worked. Just saying. Team of Destiny.
It did. But ultimately, going back to the series, my brain says Denver in seven. The heart says Denver in five. So I'm going to go with Denver in five.
I was waiting for you to say San Antonio in six.
I mean, it could happen.
It could, but more likely is Denver in five, which is where I'm going as well. I don't
know
what's
just have so much more talent, you know?
Yeah. They're just better.
They are, but you know what? In this regular season, obviously, it doesn't mean so much, but the home team won each game. They both had great home records. I think, I believe San Antonio had one of the best home records in the NBA, if I'm not wrong.
So did Denver.
Yeah, so to Denver. So these are two teams, I'm just pulling up their home records. There are two teams that are tough to play at home. San Antonio only lost 9 games out of 41, and Denver lost 7.
And both, San Antonio is one of the worst away teams in terms of playoff teams, too.
And the Nuggets are actually below 500 as well, away from home. So we're just looking at two teams that play very well at home. And I think this series is probably going to go to Game 7. And I'm going to say Denver's going to win it just because they have home court advantage. But I think the X factor in the series, surprisingly, is going to be how effective is Rudy Gay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not DeMar, eh?
No, I think DeMar is going to probably get shut down, but it's the playoffs, it's DeMar. But I think Rudy Gay could be in line for a huge series, especially at home.
Damn, I did not expect that.
Yeah, I think San Antonio needs more secondary scores than Denver does. Because I think early on in the series, you're going to see that Jamal Murray and Jokic are going to really step up into the roles and average more than 20 points a game each. So I think that's going to be a major factor. But I think ultimately, out of all the series, I think Game 1 is going to tell us more about this series than anything else. I think if Denver comes out and just blitzes San Antonio and they win by 15 to 20 points, I think that ultimately it's going to be Denver in 5. But if it stays close, I think that it probably will go 7.
Woo, Denver in 5. Let's go. I can guarantee you the next series will not be a 5-game series. The Warriors and the Clippers. The Warriors are finally healthy, and the Clippers, well, they're the Clippers. They're reliant on Lou Williams to bail them out on offense. I don't know what else to say. I'm caught, like, similar to the Eastern Conference with the Bucks and the Pistons. I think this one is quick work.
I'm gonna kind of agree with you. I just think one thing you said might be wrong. I don't know how healthy the Warriors are, especially with Steph Curry's ankle. I think that's obviously a huge cause for concern, considering how poorly they played without him when he was injured earlier this year. I think they obviously will win the series. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I just think they might take it easy with him one game and let him rest. It might be game one. It might be in the middle of the series. It depends on how he's feeling. But I could see the series maybe going to 5 games. But my heart says Golden State in 4.
Yeah, Golden State's coming in 4. Next.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
I'm sorry, there's nothing after this.
I mean, it's going to be a really high-scoring series. It'll be fun to watch the first halves, most likely, where, you know, they'll probably stay within 10 points because Golden State's not going to really play that hard. Yeah. But ultimately, it's going to be interesting to see, I guess. The only matchup I'm interested in is really Boogie and how he plays in his first playoff series. He's going against Zubac, and you know, Montrezl Harrell's going to play a lot of minutes, obviously, too.
He didn't play last year.
What's that?
Yeah, I forgot he didn't play last year.
Yeah, he tore his Achilles before the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, against Harrell, it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to actually guard the pick-and-roll action since, you know, the Clippers run a ton of pick-and-roll and run a lot of, you know, plays for their guards off the ball, and seeing if he's able to step up and get a hand in the face of guys like Landry Shamet and Lou Williams taking a lot of three-point shots, or if he's just going to stay back and play a more lackadaisical approach, and how much they play him in that kind of series against Harrell, too.
He's probably going to lay back, let's be real. He doesn't try to push up the perimeter very often.
It's also going to be interesting to see if you know how much Golden State actually uses him on offense as well.
Yeah. I guess so, eh?
Will he be a role player, or is he going to be featured because he's going against, you know, a much pretty favorable matchup if you look at it? I mean, Zubac can't really move his feet as well, and Harrell's 6'7", so.
Yeah.
A bit of a mismatch. Oh, man. Well, I guess that's it, because apparently no one wants to talk about this series anymore.
Yeah, but we can talk about one thing. I know we did this with the East. Which series is most likely for an upset, like lower seed beating a higher seed?
Well, I think we all said OKC is going to beat Portland in like 5 games. So
okay, fine. Scratch that. Besides that
six.
One.
Fine, my bad.
Is it Utah versus the Rockets or San Antonio versus Denver?
I have Utah winning that series, so you know where I stand.
I think Utah has a higher chance of beating the Rockets than San Antonio does of Denver.
I'm actually going to go the other way. I think San Antonio has a higher chance of beating Denver. than the Rockets losing to the Jazz.
How do you not like the Jazz, Raj? You love big men. You love teams that slow it down. How do you not like this team?
I just don't like their offensive output. Like, I think they rely a lot on Donovan Mitchell, and I think he's shown that he's a proven scorer, but he needs a little help, and they didn't get him that help this offseason. And I think this Utah team, although they're more experienced, I just think they have less consistent offensive firepower than they did last year. Like, I think the team is more or less the same. They lost, obviously, a few pieces, but overall, like, I just see Houston scoring too much and Utah not being able to keep up. I think they're great defensively, and I think they'll cause problems for the Rockets. I agree with all that, but at the end of the day, basketball has a huge emphasis on offense, probably more than defense, and I don't think the Jazz are anywhere close to the Rockets offensively.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I do see where you're coming from, but I still think that Utah's defense holds down Houston well enough. Enough to make
And Utah did a great job against Harden last playoffs, too. Again, the only reason they lost is because Chris Paul went crazy in Game 6, and he was really good throughout the series, too. Like, Harden hasn't really shown up in the playoffs for a pretty long time. Like, he has his games, but he's not really consistent.
Has he ever shown up in the playoffs?
I think there's a drop.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he obviously shows up, but he kind of tails off towards, you know, the last few games of every series.
No, there's like a really big difference between his regular season performance and his playoff performance.
Can we expect the same kind of calls for him? Same kind of foul calls?
No.
Yeah, that's probably a part of the reason, right?
Most definitely.
He's got the DeMar effect. Can't get to the line.
And Gobert's timing is really good, too, so you're not going to see him get those chancy fouls where Harden tries to bring his arms up into your arms, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to get those types of fouls, so he's going to have to make a lot of those floater shots, because I think that Utah's going to implement the same type of defense that Milwaukee did against Harden and just, like, hugging up against his left shoulder and just forcing him to go right, right into the paint, essentially. Which is a new defense that we haven't really seen before.
I don't understand why no one's done that yet. Like, the guy can obviously shoot, and you're always supposed to pressure to the offhand. So why hasn't anyone else done this until this year?
Like, you need the personnel, too, right? Like, you need a guy that's in the paint that's going to be able to contest those shots. And Brook Lopez has done that the entire year, and then Gobert is another guy like that. So Utah's done that as well, just not as extreme as what Milwaukee was doing. Like, Bledsoe had 1 foot in front of Harden, too. So he was literally just, you know, telling him, here you go. Have the pain. Enjoy.
Yeah, I guess so. That's fair. It is the personnel dependent. But theoretically, that should work out almost all the time.
Yeah, but the problem is you're putting your big man in a tough position where he's playing 2-on-1, right?
Well, no, you just have to have good rotations. That just means
whole point of it is you're not going to bring somebody down from the wing because you don't want to give up that corner 3-point shot. So you're basically having Gobert forcing Harden into like a 10-foot floater, or if you go to Harden, then Capella's going to get the wide-open alley-oop, right?
Yeah, so true.
I think the one disappointing factor in the series is Dante Exum's out because he was by far the best defensive player in the NBA last year in guarding Harden.
Well, did you see Patrick Beverley telling Jay Crowder how to guard him now? I'm sure you saw that clip. After the Jazz-Clippers game on the last day of the season or the second last day or something,
these guys
They were just talking afterwards, and you can just see Beverly showing Crowder, like, you know, before he gets his hand out there, you gotta like make sure that he can't, or you gotta like slap the ball out of his hands as soon as it gets there. And like, it would be fine if it was just like any kind of motion, but then he started going up with his left hand, indicating that it was like how to guard Harden specifically. It's pretty funny. It's like the whole league is conspiring against this guy. Like, everyone's just fed up with him. You know what I mean?
They all hate his cheating ways.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the matchup, though? Like, it's probably going to be Crowder?
No. It's going to be
O'Neal.
I guess it depends if Rubio's back, right? I think Rubio's probably going to guard him if he plays, and then if not, then Royce O'Neal's going to start on him.
It would be, Rubio, O'Neal, or Cephalosha would be my bets. Cephalosha's long, man.
Yeah, he is. Just, he's kind of a player that you don't hear much of anymore.
He's a defensive specialist.
You can blame the New York Police for that.
Exactly. And his shoes. I don't know how much mobility you get in Air Max 90s, but apparently Tubbo Cephalosha thinks a lot. This guy. All right, that's it. That's all. Any final words? Any more hate for DeMar DeRozan?
We've barely talked about him. That's like the funniest thing. Like, we barely even mentioned him in that series.
Yeah, and he's probably the second best player on that team. Maybe the first.
He's not the first best player. Get out of here.
The second best player on that team?
Don't like disrespect Bertans.
Yeah, like, how are we talking about Davis Bertans and Bryn Forbes over DeMar DeRozan?
It's because he's irrelevant when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, DeMar's going to pop off. Just watch. Point guard DeMar.
I don't think against Denver's defense, no.
I'm calling it. Watch. He's just going to elevate over Gary Harris a lot. And I'm going to hate it, but it's going to happen. Just watch, guys.
Nah, San Gary Harris is a solid defensive player. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, he's just going to hack him. But he will. Watch.
Teams don't fall for that in the playoffs. They're too well prepared.
Fine. But it doesn't mean that you don't just like slip into it. Because DeMar's got crazy elevation.
Stats, like DeMar DeRozan's free throw rate goes, like, it plummets in the playoffs because refs don't fall for that shit anymore.
That's on the drives, though. I'm talking about his fallback jumper, his Kobe jumper.
Nah, I think they'll have that way, like, really well scouted and just tell Harris to keep his hands straight up. Don't even fall for the pump fakes. Just let him shoot. He wants to shoot in a contested 18-foot shot. You know, do your thing. Have fun.
All right, guys. I think that's it. Let's get some rest tonight and prepare for the games tomorrow. Because apparently Josh is going to watch, like, 7 out of 8 games in 2 days.
I'm going to try.
Good luck, my friend.
12 hours of sleep tonight.
Nah, you gotta spread it out or something. Nap in between games. Took, like, a 20-minute nap in between games.
Also, on a different note, Joel said that he's not even sure if he's going to play tomorrow. So, it's not looking good.
It's okay, man. Just believe, I think. All right, I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Hit us up on iTunes ratings, obviously. You can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, all the major podcast platforms. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And, enjoy the playoffs. Until next time, peace.